You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode number 59 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you live from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
And welcome back.
I mean, I was gone like less than 24 hours.
Welcome back.
Okay,
to beautiful Seattle.
Wait, is it beautiful? It's kind of cloudy.
Always beautiful Seattle.
That's a fair point.
And we are moving into summer. And you know what that means?
It means it's time to start thinking about what the beer of the summer is going to be. Everyone talks about the song of the summer. Not as much talking about the beer of the summer. Probably because it's hyper-regional and very personal. But a couple years ago, I feel like there was a tie for us for the beer of the summer between Fremont Summer Ale and the beer we're drinking tonight on the pod, which is the Silver City Ziggy Zoggy Summer Lager.
All right, this is such a refreshing summer lager.
It is.
If it's a hot day, this beer is going down smooth.
It's also the beer that most makes me think of the Man Show.
Ziggy Zoggy?
Yeah.
Shouts to Jimmy Kimmel. Really, really doing well for himself. What we needed...
Adam Carolla not, apparently.
They really both are. It's kind of unexpected how well both of them are doing. But what we really needed was a third Pelton brother to help us decide what the beer of the summer was.
So you're saying we're going to have to find one by the end of the summer?
Might have to find a lot of third Pelton brothers.
Oh, spoiler alert there.
But let me crack open this beer. Do you have any info about it?
Oh, no, I wasn't planning to have any info about it. No, I mean, we're just going to read the bottle here, right?
So, Silver City out of Silverdale, Washington.
Bright and vibrant beer for summertime celebrations. This Zwickel beer, in uncommon style. I had never read the label. Did not realize that was the case.
That's a very uncommon style.
Is an unfiltered lager that balances crisp and elegant honey-like malt flavor with assertive classic German hop character.
Okay.
German's known for their hop character. But I was disappointed. You know, it's one thing to give a shout out to Jimmy Kimmel there, and appropriate, but we got to give a shout out, or maybe toast, the late Bill Foster, who actually performed the Ziggy Zoggy toast on the Man Show.
Did he recently die?
No, he died many years ago. Not long
Cheers
after the Man. Possibly during the Man Show's appearance. In 2000.
Well, this feels like a really appropriate time for us to toast
him. Oh, but still to his memory. To his memory.
Is he the person who he was on the show and chugged a beer?
Yeah, that was a thing. And he'd do the Ziggy Zoggy thing. That was it. That was his thing.
Still refreshing.
Crisp.
I don't know if it's a competitor for beer of the summer, though.
Yeah, we'll see. It's too early, though. It's not too early for Song of the Summer because we know that they tend to be released early. It is too early to start talking about beer of the summer.
I mean, the beer of the summer is probably released.
Yes. But you just don't know until it's like an August day and you're drinking and you're like, oh yeah.
Because that's when summer happens in Seattle. So sometimes it might even be mid-September that we figure out what the beer of the summer is.
All right. Where do we want to start here? Do we want to start with burgers or basketball?
Let's start with burgers and then do a good chunk of sports.
Okay. This week we went to what I would consider one of two classic Seattle burgers.
Okay.
One of those obviously being Dick's, which we are saving for the last review. Mm-hmm. I think it's still our plan. The other of those being Kid Valley.
Yes.
And there was a period of time in my life, probably like right after I got out of college, where I think Kid Valley was my number one burger.
Really?
Yeah. So it used to be that within a couple blocks of each other on Lower Queen Anne, near Key Arena, and then also near where the Sonics offices were when I was working there at that time, there was both a Kid Valley, and which no longer exists, and a Dick's, which is still there prominently. So
forever.
Hopefully, yes. Hopefully forever.
It's a historic landmark.
It should be. So I would opt at one point, like first heavy on going to Dick's.
Then heavy on Dick's. You could say it. Okay.
I tried to avoid. Then later tilted more towards Kid Valley.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess I probably had a similar experience. I mean, we both spent large chunks of time working on Lower Queen Anne.
That is true.
And my main issue was that Dick's now apparently accepts credit cards.
That is true.
I never had cash. I'd have to steal cash from the Vera Project to go and eat at Dick's.
You were repaying this.
Yes.
Correct. Okay. Let's make that clear.
But that's the only time that I was that I would be able to have cash because I don't keep cash. I'm not like you. I'm not a monster.
I don't know that that makes me a monster, but okay.
Sorry. I'm not an old man.
Yes, that's accurate. You were basically getting a payday loan from the Vera Project.
Yes, $4 at a time.
So that caused you to favor Kid Valley. So yes. I don't know when the last time was I had a Kid Valley burger. It was probably at either a Mariners or a Seahawks game since they have locations at both CenturyLink Field and Safeco Field. Which, by the way, soon will not be named Safeco Field. Are we discussing that in the Mariners section?
Sure. Do we have anything else to discuss? That's it.
We can start making jokes about what the new name should be.
Okay.
Anyways, I have not gone to an actual Kid Valley location in many years before I went on Sunday night.
Many years? I'm probably in the same boat. I think it's been maybe 3-4 years since I've had Kid Valley.
That's probably a reasonable estimate of it. So what do we think?
No, it's not bad. It's not a bad burger. That's what I'd say is Kid Valley, the overall presentation is very solid. Everything is in its right place. And I wouldn't describe the tomato as a tour de force, but the tomato is good. Onion is good. There are good pickles. I actually am a believer in the burger on the top. I think that's what I favor now. You argued against this.
I did.
But I think now what I believe is you put the patty on the top.
Hot side hot and cold side cold?
I think that's what I'm into.
Was that the McDLT? Was that what that was?
It apparently is what In-N-Out does too.
Okay.
So, I mean, you can't deny it.
I cannot argue with In-N-Out.
But everything about it was presented the right way. It just doesn't have, you know, the burger. It's pretty bland. It kind of ends up a little bit bland to me.
It was really cold. I went to, where did I go? To Kulon Park, to the location there, which is nearest you, and then drove over to your house.
Shasta Jean Kulon.
Yeah. And we ate them while watching the U.S. Win 1-1 in Mexico City. And the drive was not long enough that the burger should have cooled off because of it. Let me put it that way.
Okay.
Because the fries were still incredibly hot.
Incredibly hot. But can we talk about the fries for 1 second?
Okay.
Before I want to come back to the burger. Those were the worst fries that we have had at,
you think so?
Any of these burger locations. They were they literally tasted like nothing.
They are ketchup delivery systems.
Right?
That's what they are.
And I'm very pro ketchup in the little plastic cups that they have. I like that.
Yes.
But those fries, there is nothing to them. It is just potato fried. I don't even think there's salt on them. They are the antithesis of McDonald's fries.
This is all accurate. So I guess my takeaway from Kid Valley is I feel like what we're talking about, their heyday was the 1990s, maybe the early 2000s, when they were most popular in Seattle. Is that fair?
I feel like it's probably earlier, but okay. I mean, this is a burger place that's been around for like 70 years. Their heyday was probably 1960.
70 years? They definitely have not been around for 70 years.
Maybe
I looked
not
at their website
long.
The other day.
I think their heyday was earlier than you're saying.
Yeah, since 1975.
Oh, wow.
Is when they first started. And they were sold in 1989. I think that's probably when the franchising went to the next level.
Okay.
But like you look at the website.
Damn, you were right about that.
The menu, like even the fonts are like very 90s.
It's 90s, 60s.
Yes. Yes, that is actually precisely it. It's what they viewed is trying to be like a retro burger place in the 90s. And it just hasn't been updated. And I feel the same way about the burger. Like when we were kids, they were great burgers. They seemed like really good burgers to us. But now that we have all these other amazing options, they seem very much to me replacement level.
Yes, our standards are a little bit higher. And it's not a bad burger. Like I said, the presentation is very good. But I mean, to me, the meat was basically nothing, right? It was there.
I thought the bacon was not so strong.
So it was not a competitor. Let's say we're doing an Elite Eight of burgers. This will not be in the Elite Eight.
No, I mean, so what I think about Kid Valley is to be worth like a significant amount of money, a burger has to be better than Kid Valley.
Okay.
That's the kind of the concept of replacement level.
Okay.
So like the 8 ounce burger, the fact that I don't consider it significantly better than Red Kid Valley and it's twice as expensive, that's why it scored, you know, below replacement.
Okay.
It had negative war. Bar.
So you're saying Kid Valley is exact. Who's the most replacement level NBA player?
Who is currently the most replacement level NBA player? For a while, it was Tim Thomas. That was
quite for fun. A while, a long time ago. Maybe back in Kid Valley's heyday.
Bill Simmons mentioned it in the Book of Basketball.
That Tim Thomas was the most replacement level NBA player?
Yeah, and they had a footnote to Basketball Prospectus. So
really?
Yeah. Indirect shout out there.
Okay. So Kid Valley is the Tim Thomas of burgers.
Yes.
I guess I can get behind that.
What rating did you give?
I gave it an 87.
Interesting. That's a little higher. I went 85. So,
because I would eat it again, right?
Yeah, of course.
If I'm around it, let's say that I'm at Cool On and I have to decide between Ivers and Kid Valley.
Ooh, I don't know. So I had to go to Kid Valley for Baby Fantasy Genius.
You had to go to Ivers for Baby Fantasy Genius.
Yes, I had to go to Ivers, and I was like, man, I kind of just want to eat Ivers. Like real talk.
That would have made the segment very weird.
Decided to change things from a career to have salmon burgers.
Ivers is great, but I think I probably might go with Kid Valley over Ivers.
Interesting. Okay.
I mean, I really like burgers. I don't know if you noticed.
I have noticed that, actually.
What was the term that Kevin Alexander used about burgers that he ate that were not ranked?
Recreational?
Recreational. I've eaten a lot of recreational burgers.
Do we have any thoughts on what burger we're going to review this week?
I don't right now.
All right. I have nothing to add. So I guess this will be a wild card week for you.
I mean, Kid Valley was a wild card week.
It's true.
Look, nobody's eating along with us. It doesn't matter.
It's true. The two people who were, shout out to loyal listeners, Nate and Alicia, I think they gave up a long time ago.
But so after we ate these burgers, you jet-setted down to Oakland for game 5 of the NBA Finals.
Yeah, I don't know if I would describe it as jet setting, but I did fly down there, yes. And I went down there expecting to see what I saw, which is for the first time in my life seeing an NBA team win a championship at home.
Really?
And it somehow exceeded my expectations for what that would be like. So I saw, you know, the Cavaliers celebrate on the road last year, which is a very different experience than just this communal thing of, you know, probably 19,000, let's generously say there were maybe 1,000 Cavaliers fans or neutrals in the crowd, 19,000 fans collectively losing their minds at the same time.
Like, it exceeded my expectations. I heard Rock and Roll Part 2 by Gary Glitter. Never imagined it.
I did expect that. I have heard that before to celebrate the Storms championship in 2004 at Key Arena. But there's just a palpable like excitement in the crowd.
I mean, they knew all along. Could you feel it going into the game that they knew they were going to win the championship?
No, I mean, it was interesting. I had discussed this with Nate Duncan and Danny LaRue after we had lunch before the game. And
wow, name dropping.
Yeah. The sense was that the crowd was probably going to be a little tight in the early going.
Because of Game 7?
Yeah, and just the whole idea of, is this happening again? You know, that sort of thing.
But they lost one game.
No. Well, yeah, but because they lost one series that they led 3-1. That's why. But they came out well enough that I don't think that really existed. And then they went nuts during the 34-11 run during the second quarter that put them in command of the game. And they were great throughout the evening. But it was close enough that you could never really relax until the last 5 minutes or so.
Which is what you want from an NBA Finals game.
Absolutely. I mean,
look, the score was out of control by the end, so it fit your...
No, it didn't. It was a 9-point game.
Oh, under 10!
Yeah, just the second time ever.
Look at that.
Yeah.
To conclude two NBA seasons, you've seen a game that was under 10 points.
Yeah, this was not quite as tense as the one that was tied with 2 minutes left in the NBA Finals. But yeah, I mean, it was a great experience. There was also, you know, the fact that the Warriors winning it for the second time in 3 years, like it could have been not as big of a deal. But A, how they lost last year.
Yes.
And then B, the fact that this was the first one for Kevin Durant. In particular, I mean, it was for several guys. There are a lot of newcomers to the team since 2015. But Durant in particular was so much the central focus of
the crowd
this
wasn't celebrating JaVale McGee.
I mean, look, JaVale McGee, as he tweeted, he did become the first guy to win an NBA championship with a rat tail since you failed to do so at age 6.
Tweeted that?
He did tweet that.
Oh my God, I love it.
JaVale is great.
That's awesome. Okay, so Kevin Durant, you can see him getting emotional even in the last minute of the game.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think that meant for him, but then also from a Seattle perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of hoping there was like a small part of me that thought he would somehow shout out Seattle at some point.
A little bit sad that he didn't.
Yeah. That would have like really completed the night for me. But he talked before the game about how he dreamt of this moment. And I think is in my case, it exceeded his expectation.
The moment exceeded his expectations.
Yeah. Then, like, you know, the emotions with his mom.
If he shouted out Seattle post-game, let's say he's talking to Doris Burke post-game and he shouts out Seattle, I don't know how I would have reacted, but it would have been something extreme.
I mean, you still reacted by wearing your Kevin Durant hoodie today.
But I'm saying I would have done something in that moment.
Yeah.
You know, people go outside when they win championships, like shoot their guns in the air, light off fireworks.
Yeah, you would have shot your gun.
I would have gotten some poppets and popped them.
Okay.
In that moment.
Okay. That would have been appropriate.
But for Kevin Durant, from a Seattle perspective, I mean, it's such a strange thing to see, right?
Yeah.
Where just the seeing him as a very young rookie, you know, fresh-faced rookie coming into his own for one season, but us knowing that he would probably be a star in the league, and then taking Oklahoma City to a championship, making them a relevant team, along with Russell Westbrook, spurning Oklahoma City, and then winning a championship with Golden State is such a strange thing for us to have witnessed, because it wasn't just that Kevin Durant won this championship with Golden State. He went there and made them his team.
Yeah.
In this NBA Finals, it was kind of weird to see Steph push to the margins.
I mean, the push to the margins is strong. He did nearly average a triple-double.
I mean, Steph played well, but the core of their team, the emotional heart of their team, the person who was taking the most important shots was Kevin Durant.
Yes.
And I mean, it reminded me in the same way of LeBron when he went to Miami and they had that first year where him and Dwayne Wade might have had some friction. Steph Curry's not a friction kind of guy, and neither is Kevin Durant. But eventually it became LeBron's team. And it kind of feels like in the same way, eventually, this is Kevin Durant's team.
I mean, it's interesting because I feel like in the first three rounds of the playoffs, it was much more Steph's team than Durant's team. Like, he was clearly the best player. Obviously, Durant had the injuries. That was a factor in it. But, like, in the Western Conference Finals, in the Western Conference semifinals, when Durant was healthy, Curry was still the better player. And in by plus-minus was still kind of the most important player even in this series.
Really?
But, as you say, most important shots definitely going to Durant.
What do you think this means for the city of Seattle?
I mean, probably not that much, but it's interesting. I feel like you're probably more qualified to speak on this than I am because of the fact that there are certain of these emotional elements that I have to tamp down as an objective journalist.
It's hard to say because I really only care about Kevin Durant. I don't care about the Warriors because in general, I was cheering for the Cavs. It still felt like, even though they won the championship last year, my wanting to cheer for the underdog impulse still made me cheer for the Cavs.
I mean, it definitely wasn't like the experience in Seattle during the 2012 NBA Finals when the entire city was rooting for Miami. Like, there was that whole, like, Sonic/Heat logo, you remember, that people made during the 2012 Finals?
It's different, right? Because Kevin Durant is not the Thunder. Kevin Durant isn't not the Thunder.
Yes.
And we've discussed our favorite team is not the Thunder, if you have to pick favorites from Seattle. Kevin Durant isn't that, but still what he represents is very important for that favorite team. And I just like Kevin Durant.
Right. He's awesome.
I mean, it's like you watch Kevin Durant and like him, but it's still kind of, it reeks of disappointment. Where it's like, I wish that we could have seen this person grow up here. We saw him grow up. We didn't get to see him grow up in front of our eyes. I feel the same way about Russell Westbrook.
I mean, I don't feel the same way about Russell Westbrook just because of the fact that he never played a minute in Seattle.
But you remember when you talked about, I asked you if we would have been kids when Isaiah Thomas was doing what he's doing right now. And you said it was incalculable how much we would have liked him.
Right.
I feel the same way about Russell Westbrook. We secretly, let's say that history is rewritten. Oklahoma City, the team never moves to Oklahoma City. They do more or less the same moves, right?
Mm-hmm.
We would like Russell Westbrook more than we liked Kevin Durant. Is that a hot take? This would be Alex Rodriguez and Kevin Durant Jr. Eventually, in the end, we would like Kevin Durant more, but in the moment, well, maybe not, because I don't. It's very strange.
Wait, is this more Griffey A-Rod, or is this more Kemp Durant? Did we all, or Kemp Payton? I mean, did we? Because
okay, let's go with that.
Because like, Payton in the moment, because of the fact that he stayed, I think we liked more.
Gary Payton has exceeded Sean Kemp because of, it's almost like, okay.
But
like,
Kemp is more popular now than Payton, don't you think?
Let's say like DVOA and DR in football, right? You have a per play basis and then the overall season.
A counting stat and then a
Sean Kemp
efficiency stat.
On a per play basis is our favorite basketball player to have ever played in Seattle. Gary Payton for his entire career is our favorite basketball player to have ever played in Seattle. And I feel the same way. I think we would have looked at this in the same way with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. But even if they were both on the team at the same time, I think that we would have liked Russell Westbrook more than we liked Kevin Durant.
I don't know. I think it would have depended on the person. Because who you like more between Durant and Westbrook says something about, I mean, first off, everything says something about who you are as a person. He's nothing
every
like really
thing.
But nothing like your opinion about Durant versus Westbrook, it doesn't like say anything. You don't have unique insight into Durant or Westbrook.
Yes.
It says something about how you view the world. And so people who view themselves as like iconoclasts and
yes,
against conventional norms, those people are going to love Russell Westbrook.
Yes.
Whereas, you know, people who are more by the book, they're going to like Durant. So I think it would have split the fan base, not like divided the fan base, but it would have split among the fan base in that way.
Do you feel like Kemp and Payton were the same way? Because Gary Payton was the more brash one between...
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it also spoke to, like, do you appreciate more the pass or the dunk?
Throwing it down.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a strange thing to consider.
I mean, it's also a crazy hypothetical to imagine because, you know, in the event that somehow let's say that the Steve Ballmer ownership group that they tried to put together at the 11th hour to keep the team in Seattle.
Yes.
Let's say they buy the team and eventually build a private arena. Like, they would have found a way to keep everyone. And
including James Harden?
Yeah. Like, luxury tax would not have been a concern for those guys.
Yes.
And that team, if you had kept it together, I mean, it boggles the mind. There's probably more talent on that Oklahoma City team that reached the finals in 2012 than there is on this Warriors team.
Really?
Yeah. Because I don't think the difference between Ibaka and Klay Thompson as the fourth guy is large as having three MVP candidates instead of two.
Three MVP. I mean, you're talking about the finals MVP, most likely the regular season MVP, and the person who was competing with Russell Westbrook for the regular season MVP. It is pretty unbelievable.
We probably don't talk about it enough. We as in, like, the NBA community, and then we as in the city of Seattle.
And also having Serge Ibaka, I mean, there were other good players around them.
Yeah.
The fact that they went, man, it's making me feel a little bit good. I'm feeling a little bit good that those players, that doesn't exist anymore. That I'm a little bit sad that it existed at all, but that they had within their grasp probably three of the five best players in the NBA.
Yeah.
Maybe even four best players. Steph and LeBron, right?
Kawhi should be in there as well. Let's go with three of the six best.
Okay, so you have three of the six best players in the NBA at the same time and somehow let that slip out of their hands.
And did not win a championship.
It's almost 90s Sonics-like.
The 90s Sonics were in the news a little bit with the comparison between the 96 Sonics and the 2017 Cavaliers in terms of against the two teams that are in the running for the greatest team of all time at this point. Both of those teams extending the series with 20-point wins in Game 4.
Really?
Yeah, identical margins.
I mean, it was a different series setup, so they didn't have a chance to get the next one.
But you know what? Still feel pretty good about the 96 Sonics taking two games off maybe the best team of all time.
As usual to the 96 Sonics.
Again, we don't toast them enough.
Okay, we're toasting again, too.
Shout out to Hersey Hawkins.
Ooh. Feed the Hawk.
I'd also like to deliver a shout out here to Alex Warnicki, who was in the video of Kevin Durant celebrating with Warriors fans, getting out of the car and just going into kind of the masses of fans to celebrate after the game.
Yeah, that was kind of strange. Where was he?
I think this is outside the arena, basically, where you drive out.
Why did he get into a car and then he got in? I was wondering.
Well, because he would have driven from the parking lot where you can't.
To right there? I was wondering where that was. I was like, did Kevin Durant just pull up to the club and there's all these Warriors fans outside?
I'm pretty sure that was at the Oracle Oakland Coliseum complex. But he was the person who was there rocking a Sonics Durant jersey
really?
In the crowd. So who is represented there? He is a Seattle native who is now in San Francisco.
Well, we'll give a toast to him again.
Yeah. So.
Anyway, it's a very fascinating situation.
It is.
And
Durant's probably going to get a few of them now.
I'm okay with that.
Okay.
The one thing that I want to see is I just desperately want to see Russell Westbrook on the Lakers.
Hmm. Well, we'll know a lot more about Russell Westbrook's future this summer because he's eligible for that Supermax extension. Because he's only got 1 year left on his contract before he can become a free agent at this point. But if he takes that extension, that would kick in potentially another 5 years on top of that, I think.
And if he's gone, the Thunder are moving into Philadelphia 76ers mode, right?
I don't think they would do that because he would still have, you know, Steven Adams and Victor Oladipo, young players with high salaries.
Totally fine to see the Thunder build around Steven Adams and Victor Oladipo. Especially in a Western Conference that has the Warriors.
They would have a tough time competing with the Warriors in that scenario.
I'm totally fine seeing that. But I just want to see, on the West Coast, LA to Oakland or San Francisco in the future, Kevin Durant against Russell Westbrook in that setting.
That'd be quite fascinating. Do you feel, by the way, vindicated by the outcome of the series and last night in your pick of Kevin Durant is the 2016 Pelton Cast Seattle Sports Figure of the Year?
I mean, partially, but we knew it was going to happen.
But we didn't necessarily know that he was going to have this. He was going to be Finals MVP.
Yeah, I think maybe we didn't see that, but we could see. Look, this team won 73 games last year, and they added Kevin Durant.
Yeah, that was clear. Yes.
Any person who didn't think they were going to win the championship, which is insane. Yeah. But I guess I feel slightly vindicated by that. And I think also just seeing kind of what it meant for Seattle to see Kevin Durant win that championship.
And shout out to loyal listener Ben B, who took that audio and put it to video, as he does so well. All right, well, let's go from talking about the ghosts of Sonic's past to the ghosts of Sonic's future and get back to discussing the Seattle arena situation. If you haven't listened to it, last week's podcast special breaking down the arena situation is, I think, a must listen if you're interested in kind of understanding the issue.
It's a vital podcast. Stop everything. Stop listening right now and go listen to that.
So let's talk about the developments in the last week since we recorded that podcast.
Okay.
Starting, I think, with one of the things we discussed in there is the possibility that the $50 million in tax credits that Oakview Group is planning to put towards the renovation of Key Arena, the idea that could be used to renovate Key Arena as a music-only venue is if they decide to build the Soto Arena and improve that street vacation.
Yes.
And credit to Sonics Rising for also having that same thought and fleshing it out a little bit. So we found out a little more about how that works. So it's interesting because apparently Oakview kind of pioneered this a little bit in terms of using this when they renovated the Forum in Los Angeles to turn it into a music venue that has become quite popular down
and
there.
Kind of had from initial thought about renovating Madison Square Garden.
Yes, that's originally stemmed from, you know, if they had to move Madison Square Garden, they would have been able to use this. But the interesting thing about it is, so the money, if approved, would go directly to the city. And it would be the city that would have to earmark that for the Oakview Group. So you have to factor that in as part of the financial subsidy that Oakview is receiving from the city when you compare the Key Arena renovation to the Soto plan. And that definitely does make it clear that the city could also opt to use that money to renovate Key Arena into a music-only venue, which the cost of that has been estimated at about $150 million. So that $50 million that Oakview is projecting, that'd be a third of the cost right there. And, you know, if the Hansen Group is willing to chip in some money towards that process, it makes it all the more cost viable compared to the public subsidies that Oakview Group is asking for.
So the Hansen Group could chip in to help them convert it to a music-only venue?
Yes.
Interesting.
I mean, they there's anyone could do that, but I'm just saying that's a possibility in terms of, you know, is there making the case for their plan vis-a-vis the key arena renovation?
So it would be $150 million if it was converted to a music only venue.
That's the estimate, yeah.
What would the cost be if it were a multiple sport venue?
Like the Oakview plan?
Yeah, the full plan.
I think they're $550 million.
Wow. Or
maybe it's $594 million.
What is the difference between those two plans?
Well, they're not digging down and increasing the size of it. All you're doing, you're reducing the size of it if you do that. You know, reducing the bowl capacity. So you're making it a more intimate venue.
Interesting.
That would be able to handle kind of mid-sized concerts between the 20,000 that you would have at the Soto Arena, and then, you know, you would be able to speak more to what the upper end is of capacity at the smaller venues like Paramount.
Like WaMu Theater or something.
Yeah.
It would be able to find something that, I mean, WaMu Theater is not a natural music venue.
It is not.
And that's why if you have a concert which is it sits somewhere in this 4,000 to 5,000 range, right? It kind of has to go there because there's no other venue in Seattle. You can play the Paramount twice, but that's it.
So I think you might go a little larger than that. I would estimate probably like 8,000 maybe.
As the max capacity?
If you renovated it.
I feel like they would do it 8 to 12 or something like that because they still want to be able to get those bigger shows.
Yeah, and there may be some sports events that you could continue to bring in there. I don't know how that would work exactly. But, you know, there is kind of an absence in this city of that size arena. There used to be, you know, Mercer Arena was smaller than that, but there's nothing basically between Royal Brougham Pavilion and Key Arena at this point.
Has there been conversation around that?
A little bit, yeah. I think they're mostly thinking of it as music only.
Interesting.
So.
Huh.
So they estimate
not against that idea.
They estimate that could at least be a break-even option for Key Arena in the future and possibly even make them some money if they do that with the initial upfront $150 million investment. Okay, moving on Sonics Arena updates. A report from King 5 that Wally Walker, who's part of the Chris Hansen Soto Arena group, met with NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman last week before he was traditionally booed as he presented the Stanley Cup trophy to the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Was Adam Silver booed on?
Adam Silver was booed.
Wait, what? Why? Yeah. What are you talking?
Because he suspended Draymond Green. That's why.
Because he suspended Draymond Green. So Adam Silver is the person, I don't know who specifically to credit or blame for this. Adam Silver is the person who set up the salary cap that they could sign Kevin Durant.
I mean, he didn't like set it up for that, but yes. I mean, I was
thinking, he should be more than praised.
I was thinking that's probably
Draymond Green being suspended. Draymond Green said it himself.
It got them Kevin Durant. Yeah,
I think that's got to be the first time that like Adam Silver was like really significantly booed in his career. Wow, he was booed again this year.
I mean, yeah,
because he suspended Draymond Green last year.
Yep.
Wow, those Warriors fans need to get themselves in check.
And I'm surprised there hasn't been more discussion about this. I didn't even bring it up on the TBA pod we did today.
That is insane that he was booed. I mean, this is not Roger Goodell here. He suspended Draymond Green more or less with cause. Probably should have suspended Zaza this year, which may have been good for the Warriors. But also, he's somebody who set them up to get Kevin Durant.
Yes. All right.
Sorry.
That sidebar aside, indications that, you know, the NHL continues to monitor both of these.
Why is Gary Bettman booed, by the way?
He's blamed for the fact that they lost. They're the only, I mean, they lost an entire season to a lockout. So that's a significant
booed.
Part of it.
Okay.
There was also the theory for a while that, like, the NBA sent him over to the NHL just to tank the NHL as a competitor to them. I don't believe that. This is where Jade would put in the conspiracy theory music.
Didn't hockey have kind of a resurgence?
Hockey's doing pretty well.
Hockey playoffs.
Definitely in Nashville.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, you're getting prepared for the cold take segments as soon as Seattle gets an NHL team.
I mean, I want to have a friend from Nashville on just to talk about hockey. I want to do a full hour on hockey.
That was I was going to say it was fun to watch the end of Game 6, but it wasn't fun, actually. It was quite depressing, but it was still entertaining.
Yes. Anyway, I don't remember what you were talking about.
Gary
Bettman said that a team would come to Seattle basically no matter what.
No, no, he did not say that. He said the opposite.
Oh, really?
Like, publicly, he has to maintain, like, oh, no decision has been made. You know, we'll see when they put a shovel in the ground. Those sorts of things. But as I've said before in this podcast, no matter what happens, the NHL is coming to Seattle.
They don't care where the arena is.
There is a viable NHL arena plan. You can take that to the bank.
And the NHL even probably views current Key Arena as a viable hockey arena.
No, they do not.
They don't.
I mean, it could be a temporary arena for a year or two if a team were to move here while Soto Arena was being constructed. I think that's possible.
And that was close to being the case when the Kings were hypothetically going to come here, right?
Well, I mean, the team was the Phoenix Coyotes, and they didn't end up moving. So, you know, I don't...
Did they have a new arena?
But there was discussion. It's in Glendale in a suburb. They built it, but...
It is a new
That
arena.
Team will probably still end up moving at some point and may end up moving here.
Okay, so are they the most likely team to move here?
Yes. But they may also expand because they're currently at 31 teams at an odd number after expanding just to Las Vegas when they clearly had a spot set aside for Seattle.
They just went to
and
Vegas.
And Seattle just didn't have an arena deal
like
done.
It's between Seattle and Banff and Vegas. I think they're like, we're going to the desert. Hockey is going to the desert.
Regina did not get a team.
Okay. Also on Sonics Arena news.
So the other thing King 5 had in the past week, shout out to Chris Daniels, who does great work on this arena coverage, was an interview with Bruce Harrell, the president of the Seattle City Council, where he, you know, was, I think, pretty positive, all things considered, about the Key Arena renovation plans, you know, expressed certainly some excitement about, you know, what the possibility of negotiating with Oakview to put together a deal that could work. But also importantly, you know, we talked last week about all these people are saying that the Soto plan is dead, even though they are not members of the Seattle City Council, who are the ones who ultimately decide what's going to happen.
There's been a Mariners ad.
No, this is actually for the old cannery.
Oh, okay. I was going to say shots to Amazon Fresh Field.
So... Bruce Harrell, I have not heard it's dead. I've heard it had a consistent heartbeat. So
I have not heard it's dead.
Yeah, but he says the proposal for Key Arena has come together quite well. It's part of a vision that we can really activate. The problems are going to be significant, but I think we can overcome them. So since Harrell was, you know, one of the four yes voters on Street Vacation in Soto, and you know, I think someone who has generally favored that plan in the past, not a great sign, I wouldn't say, that he has been so positive about Key Arena.
Yes.
All right, the last thing of note, which doesn't seem on its face to have anything to do with this, but actually does touch it, is the news on Tuesday that David Bonderman has resigned from the board of directors of Uber.
And resigned after being recorded making a sexist comment during an Uber meeting on sexism.
On sexual harassment, yes. So this is interesting because, of course, Bonderman was revealed last week by the Oakview Group as one of their investors, and specifically, in all likelihood, an investor in a hockey team. Probably, I think, most of our listener had never heard of David Bonderman before last week.
Now
all
of a sudden
he's a national news story. Yeah.
So I guess as loyal listener Mike Jeremiah said, at the very least, this is a bad look for the group.
Exactly. I mean, I don't want to read too much into this. Like, people make comments that they regret. We do this all the time on the podcast, for example.
I regret everything I say.
But It definitely, like, it's
the
not good
he,
PR
he
when you're trying to have in a time where you need good PR.
It's not just a comment he regretted. He resigned from the board.
Yes.
It's more than that, right? This is a story that I think will have, I mean, Uber has their own problems, right? But has a little bit more legs than just it's a comment that he regrets.
I mean, it's also interesting in the context that the community advisory panel did suggest that Phil Anschutz's history of donations to anti-gay groups were a factor in why they recommended Ophiu over the Seattle Partners proposal. I mean, I don't want to compare what this one remark from David Bonderman to, you know, giving donations to groups. Like, that's a much clearer statement of intent.
Yes.
But, like, clearly these kinds of things are important to the city of Seattle.
It doesn't help.
Yes.
I mean, they still have Jerry Bruckheimer as the face of that group, and he's a much more public person, right? Jerry Bruckheimer has produced Mission Impossible or whatever, right?
So many things. Don't make me go through the list again.
I'm just thinking of Tom Cruise movies. I have no idea if he actually produced it.
I believe he did.
But what was that? What was that movie with Nick Cage where he's like trying to break out of a jail when it's at Alcatraz?
The Rock?
The Rock. He had to have produced that, right?
I don't think he actually produced that.
But it still doesn't look good. Because part of the reason that this group may have been favored over the Soto group is because of having this public hockey ownership attached to it.
That's true. So, yeah. It takes a little of the excitement out of that, for sure.
So any damage that's done to that, you know, it creates a little bit more doubt. And it just, they're not in a position to be able to have questions raised at this point.
I think they are, but again, it doesn't help. All right, I think it's time to get specifically to current Seattle sports. And we'll start with your favorite segment. Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at you.
I don't know if my takes are that hot this week, but I will say, I said 2 weeks ago, the Mariners have a window. I said last week that they smashed through that window.
Wait, that sounds negative.
They fulfilled.
Didn't they just open the window?
No, they smashed right through that window.
Okay.
They fulfilled what I said they needed to do, and that was win every single home series on their long homestand. I didn't realize they'd be playing a road series to end it.
Oh, yeah. How about that?
But what the Mariners have done in getting to the point where they are now 32-34, near 500, is take themselves out of irrelevance. They were there for a period of time. They didn't matter. And now all of a sudden they sit 2.5 games out of the wild card. Mitch Haniger back in the lineup. Felix coming. Hisashi Iwakuma coming. Because they need help on the mound right now. Even in a game that they lost 20-7 and Carlos Ruiz finished the game. I think he might be some help. Just throwing that out there. There's a chance that he could help. They still hit the ball pretty well. I'm saying if you want a silver lining to a game that you lost by 13 runs, they still scored 7 runs.
That is the faintest silver of all.
That's not a bad hitting game. This team can hit. Mitch Haniger is back. And what they need to do, they have a long road trip, right? They are going into teams that are competing for the wild card with them, like the Rangers, like the Twins. They need to split or win these series.
Yeah.
They are at a point now where the Mariners cannot lose series anymore for the rest of the season. That's
it. Oh, wow.
They have to be done with it.
28 hits?
The Mariners had a lot of hits in that game.
They had 14. That's got to be like the most hits in a 9-inning game, right? Like, that's got to be up there.
The Mariners had a lot of, I think there was a lot. Look, Carlos Ruiz pitched an inning. But the Mariners have to keep winning these series. But
it was a franchise record for hits for the Twins.
They have gotten to the point where we're still paying attention. And 2 weeks ago, that wasn't the case. The Mariners are now TV that you need to watch.
The most since 2007. Do you need to watch it because there's really nothing else on?
Because that's it.
It's pretty much your only option unless the Sounders happen to be playing.
But getting out of irrelevance, the Mariners were there so early. It looked like one of the seasons that they had 3 seasons ago, 5 seasons ago, 7 seasons ago,
any odd
9
number.
Seasons ago.
Literally any odd number you pick out to 16. That's the last one that isn't. I guess 14.
But all of a sudden, it's June. It's nearing late June, and we can still pay attention to this team.
Okay, that's a win.
And that ain't bad.
So in news we hinted at earlier, the Mariners and Safeco announced today that the sponsorship of Safeco Field will be allowed to expire after the 2018 season, and the Mariners will be searching for a new naming rights partner.
They said those fuzzy hats are gone.
Wait, what?
You know what I'm talking about? They're like the hat with the little like fur that sticks up. Those are Safeco hats.
Are they?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, look, naming rights are what they are. The city of Seattle has been very lucky with the naming rights that they've had. Key Arena, Safeco Field, even CenturyLink, which is a little clunky. Like, you can turn those all into, like, reasonable-sounding names. The Safe, the Key, the Clink was kind of a thing. I fear that whatever they get is going to regress to the mean significantly in terms of naming rights.
I don't know. I think your basis to begin with is wrong.
You don't think that those are good names?
No, I don't know if those are necessarily good names. I'm saying that, or bad names, I'm saying that it's all about familiarity.
I suppose, but there are
some
names.
What is the worst naming rights that you can think of?
I mean, like Qualcomm is not great.
Okay.
O.co Coliseum, I'm not a particular fan of.
I just think whatever it is, if you're familiar with it, you're going to, you don't even think about it.
I suppose, but like on its face, Safeco Field, the safe sounds good.
Sure.
Like basically what I'm saying is that internet,
the clink sounds
internet
good
companies have horrible names. That's actually what I'm saying here. And the Mariners have, in the city of Seattle, has not had stadiums named after online companies. That's okay. That's exactly what I'm getting.
What do we call the clink before? We called it Quest Field.
Yeah, Quest was not ideal.
We felt fine with it. At no point were we like, oh no, Quest Field.
Yeah, I don't know.
I just don't think it matters.
Qualcomm has been around a while. It doesn't sound any better.
Just very anti-Qualcomm.
Very anti-Qualcomm.
Is Qualcomm a business still?
I don't know. But also,
there was a period where there were a lot of like telecommunications companies who were naming stadiums.
Apparently Qualcomm's still a thing. Yeah, that's okay. Still a thing. Perhaps they'll have no bidders, and like Kirita, they'll just continue to keep the name because it was too expensive for them to change the sides to something generic.
Because KeyBank exists?
KeyBank exists, yes.
Okay.
There are many locations here.
They're just not paying for it.
They are not paying for it.
Okay. I'm hoping that WAMU gets back in the game here.
Yeah. Good luck with all that.
Maybe there'll be no bidders and they change it to WAMU Field.
Okay. All right. Should we talk about the Sounders?
Yeah.
They had the weekend off from MLS play. As we noted, the USMNT was busy winning at home and then drawing in Mexico to greatly enhance their chances of qualifying for the 2018 World Cup in Russia.
Winning at home and then winning in Mexico.
Yes. Despite Clint Dempsey not taking the field.
Disappointingly.
Yeah. That was but hard to argue with Bruce Arena's tactics based on the results. But the Sounders were back in action on Tuesday night. Actually, S2 was really in action.
Yeah.
Because for the U.S. Open Cup match against the Portland Timbers, both teams basically just played their entire USL teams. I went to an S2 T2 game earlier this year, and it was basically the same as this one. That Aaron Kovar played.
Kids were coming through, though.
They were. The Sounders won it 2-1 to advance in the U.S. Open Cup. A much better result than, as we discussed last week, the last time these two teams faced in the U.S. Open Cup.
And that was basically the entire starting roster playing.
Right, and I guess I don't know how much that played into kind of the logic of, yeah, we don't want that to ever happen ever again.
The last time that Clint played at Starfire, he was suspended for 11 games.
And Obafemi Martins was injured, yes. So the Sounders now into the round of 16, where they will face the winner of the match between the San Jose Earthquakes and the San Francisco Deltas.
I was going to say, are there any NASL teams or sub MLS teams left?
Oh yeah, there's still plenty of those left.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
good.
I mean it's like 50-50 between whether the matchups are all MLS or not. Not even that. I think there's more than a quarter of the teams are from lower divisions.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to see.
Yeah. So we will see how that continues to play out and when that game is scheduled, but always good because the Sounders, if they can avoid stumbling early in the US Open Cup, they tend to win it all.
Yes.
That's their history.
I mean, we're bringing it back to Seattle.
It's been too long.
And also, you know, the regular season's not going so well, and that feels like U.S. Open Cup time.
It really does. So the Sounders back in MLS action this weekend. On Saturday, they will visit NYCFC, who are third in the East, but number one in expected goal differential on American Soccer Analysis, two spots ahead of the Sounders. They have the best defense in MLS in terms of expected goals allowed per game, and their offense is basically right up there with the top of the league. So it's interesting.
Yeah, who's playing for NYCFC?
Yeah,
right now?
So they came in with like a bunch of veteran DP stars. Frank Lampard is gone.
Is he retired or playing in China?
I'm not sure. I did not do that research.
That's fine.
Andrea Pirlo is playing part time. Mix Diskerud, who is not a designated player but was a USMNT star, they brought in. He got loaned out to Norway. They've
Mix Diskerud is playing in Norway right now?
Yeah.
What? Why?
Other than David Villa, because he was so bad for NYCFC. David Villa, who is tied for third in the MLS with 8 goals, it's basically an entirely, you know, turned over roster from when they first came into the MLS a couple years ago. They brought in a new DP, Argentinian playmaker Maximiliano Morales, this year. And then also last year's number one pick of the MLS Super Draft, Jack Harrison, who was the runner-up to Jordan Morris for Rookie of the Year, is playing well. And they've found a really nice mix here. No pun intended.
After having a very bad mix last year.
Yes, they had the wrong mix, and now they have the right mix. So this will be a tough one for the Sounders on the road to come away with points.
So Pirlo, as an Italian soccer fan, probably the greatest Italian soccer player, maybe aside from Buffon that we've seen.
Let's go with field player, yeah, of our lifetimes.
You've got Buffon, Pirlo, Roberto Baggio.
Yeah. Totti's got to be somewhere in the mix.
He didn't play long enough.
With the national team?
Yeah, nationally.
He's played long enough. He's played a very long
Played long enough, but didn't play.
He's played like 23 years for Roma or something. Yeah, really.
Somebody should have convinced him to play internationally. But he's only playing part-time right now?
Yeah, he's played about half the minutes so far this season, which is probably about all he can manage at this point. Pirlo does not like running.
Not doing a lot of running out there. Not a big fan of that. Okay.
But he still delivers a gorgeous ball into the box.
And so NYCFC, when they came into the league, they wanted to bring in these star players.
Yeah,
players from places also that fans in New York would recognize them from.
Yes.
And bring out...
Then they realized they should actually try to win games.
And now I mean, this is the same thing that the Sounders kind of did a little bit. Basically, you start out, you try to make a splash in the MLS, and then
The Sounders were much better right away than the NYCFC is. NYCFC was the worst team in the league their first year.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Which is why they got the number one pick.
But now they're evolving into an actual MLS team.
Yeah, it's a more sustainable style for them. So.
And they look good.
Yeah. All right, the Seattle Storm, quick update here. They have lost 3 in a row since we last potted, dropping them back to 500 on the season at 5-5. All close games, an 83-80 loss Friday at Indiana, late technical foul on Jenny Busek that the league later rescinded, but could not take away that point from the technical foul. Costly in that one. A 94-86 loss at New York on Sunday, despite Brianna Stewart and Sue Bird both playing well in their return to their home state. And then came back home tonight to face the Atlanta Dream, but lost to them 91-86 in overtime.
Wow, tough loss at home.
Yeah. So really kind of, you know, I described this on Twitter as a reality check for the Storm. When we potted last week, they were still ranked number 2 in the league in the AP's poll of teams. And that made no sense based on, like, they had played well, but they were almost entirely at home to start the season. And they still have major issues in terms of their depth and their defense. They were 9th in the league in defensive rating out of 12 teams coming into tonight's game. Their bench has really given them very little other than one, you know, tremendous game by Sammy Whitcomb that she basically single-handedly won them against New York earlier this season. So all of those things are going to be issues. But fortunately, they have a little time off here. They only play one time in, I think, the next 10 days. I think there's only one time. And that one time is the return to Seattle for Kelsey Plum Sunday with the San Antonio Stars. And speaking of struggling.
Oh, no.
Kelsey Plum, it's not been great for the number one pick in the WNBA. An adjustment to the WNBA after she sprained her ankle in preseason. She currently has the 5th worst wins above replacement player in the league, which she does have some company because 3 of the bottom 10 in WARP are top 10 picks from this year's draft.
Really?
Including her teammate Nia Coffey. In a related story, the San Antonio Stars are 0-9 on the season.
Oh, no.
So Plum has been starting lately ahead of Mariah Jefferson, who was the number 2 pick in last year's draft, was Brianna Stewart's teammate at UConn. Mm-hmm. But Jefferson has been playing significantly better off the bench. Plum really just still hasn't been able to get it going. She has more turnovers than assists on the season. She's turning the ball over on more than a quarter of the plays she finishes. And she's shooting 27.8% on twos and 25.0% on threes. So hopefully a return to Seattle will get her going.
Is this game on TV? Can we watch Kelsey Plum?
All the home games, I believe, are televised either on Q13 or Joe TV.
All right. I might watch that. So it's on Sunday, you said?
That is Sunday night or Sunday afternoon. The 4 o'clock starts on Sunday.
It'd be very nice to watch Kelsey Plum in the dub.
Yeah, so that one will be on Joe TV for Seattle viewers.
And then for Kelsey Plum's former school, the men's basketball program picking up a recruit this week.
Oh, it's too bad we have nothing left to toast with, because a toast to UW and to Mike Hopkins adding Nziah Carter, who we talked about last week, Jay-Z's nephew, which I am going to say here, despite us saying this here, despite my hope that Jay-Z shows up when the Huskies play at Madison Square Garden next year, I want Nziah Carter to be judged on his own merits and not just as Jay-Z's nephew.
Okay. I think he'll be judged on his own merits.
Like, I want him to be, like, respected. Like, you didn't recruit him just because of the fact that Jay-Z is his uncle.
Sure.
They recruited him because...
You think Mike Hopkins knows anything about Jay-Z?
I mean, based on the SI article, you know, I don't think it's his favorite, but I mean, first off, you coach college kids, you have to know about Jay-Z.
Okay.
Yeah. But he was one of the best unsigned players left out there at this point in the recruiting process, and someone who had really come on in terms of his performance in the Nike EYBL lately. I wouldn't be stunned if he ends up redshirting this season because of the fact that he's still pretty skinny for his size, and the Huskies do have a pretty deep wing rotation next year.
Do you think that Mike Hopkins' favorite Jay-Z album is Kingdom Come? You think he thinks it's a little bit underrated?
I mean, that does seem like the kind of thing someone would think.
Okay, he likes the song with Chris Martin. Anyway.
Another interesting point here is the Huskies going to the East Coast to recruit.
Yes.
You know, in this case, Hopkins had the connection with Carter from when he was an assistant at Syracuse. And an interesting post on the Syracuse SB Nation blog, Troy Nunes is a magician, pointing out that last week he extended offers to two East Coast players, New Hartford wing Frankie Policelli, who sounds like he's like
season two of The Wire.
I was going Sopranos.
Okay.
But is actually an African-American wing player. He's very athletic. And then also Marcus Zagorowski, who also does not sound like...
Taking him back to the docks. Okay.
Which is Michael Carter Williams' half-brother.
Okay.
So Carter Williams obviously played for Hopkins at Syracuse, so a connection there. So an interesting note that... So both of those guys from the East Coast, and Hopkins may be trying to work those connections since his West Coast recruiting base not as established yet.
I mean, this is what he needs to do right now. He just needs players.
I mean, not necessarily for next year. We'll see how many players end up leaving. But they don't have a ton of spots, presumably. But, you know, you're always wanting to over-recruit a little bit given the nature of attrition in the college game at this point.
Yes.
Players transferring, that sort of thing. All right, let's wrap it up by talking about the Seahawks. Not a lot of major Seahawks news, but one interesting thing is the NFL 100 moved into its top from 30 to 21 last week. And that group included three Seahawks and presumably the conclusion of the Seahawks on the list, guessing that Austin Davis probably did not crack the top 20. So we had number 30, Earl Thomas, number 24.
Let's run through all of them.
Russell Wilson, number 21, Richard Sherman. Yes, the full list. 88, Doug Baldwin. 56, Cliff Avril. 46, Michael Bennett. 39, Bobby Wagner. 34, Cam Chancellor. And then Thomas, Wilson, and Sherman. So the Seahawks have eight of the top 100 players in the NFL, according to other NFL players.
Most of their core. The players who they're actually paying money to.
I mean, that's pretty good.
But I had to have some takeaways from this.
Okay, you've got takes.
Right. Okay, so first off, I'm gonna start with this one because I was looking at it. I was looking at the list overall, trying to find the most egregious of players on here. Because I'm scrolling through it, and I'm like, there are a lot of these that seem kind of shocking, right? So first of all, DeMarco Murray, who ranked somehow number 33 on the NFL 100, statistically per Football Outsiders, worse than Kristen Michael last season.
That's not ideal.
A shocking
number. But Christian Michael could affect the 20.
You never know.
We don't know yet.
We'll kind of as an unknown on there. But most importantly is...
there's a lot of autoplay and video here.
I really think autoplay and video is getting more out of control in like the last 2 weeks on the internet. I don't know if you noticed
In the last 2 weeks? I don't know.
I think it's gotten really bad. But anyway, aside from that is Doug Baldwin not getting any respect again.
I mean, it doesn't surprise me at this point.
But okay, listen to me.
He's pedestrian. We all know that.
Do you want a list of players who rank worse than Doug, these are wide receivers who rank worse than Doug Baldwin, both by DR and DVOA.
Okay.
So we are talking per play value and overall season value who were ranked ahead of him on the NFL 100 this last season.
Okay.
Jarvis Landry.
Yeah.
Tyreek Hill, Larry Fitzgerald, who was below replacement level, Amari Cooper, Dez Bryant, and Julian Edelman. There are not that many wide receivers ahead of him. Basically, only Mike Evans, who is ahead of him, actually ranked better than Doug Baldwin statistically.
Yeah, but...
And this is not... We're not talking about legacy players here, because Doug Baldwin is coming off of a season, this last season, which he was, hypothetically, the previous year, he may have been the best wide receiver in football.
But, I mean, people are just assigning all that credit to Darrell Bevell, right? And to the scheming to get Doug Baldwin open.
He's somebody who somehow, despite being statistically maybe the number two receiver, right? We'll give Antonio Brown number one. Maybe the number two receiver in football the previous season, somehow ranked number 72, followed that up with a top 10 season, and fell 16 spots behind Julian fucking Edelman.
I mean, look.
Look, Larry Fitzgerald, Julian Edelman, both below replacement level receivers. Jarvis Landry was like number 42.
Look, when
who is writing this list? Miami Dolphins fans?
I mean, the players themselves vote on this list. Look, when you've got an offensive line like the Seahawks, that kind of protection, it allows anyone to get
it's Jermaine Kearse on the other side of the field is taking so much attention away.
I have such a terrible Jermaine Kearse joke.
Wait, no, I want to hear it.
I can't say it.
Oh, you have to say it. You have to say it. What is your terrible Jermaine Kearse joke?
Can't say it. I'm hashtag Kearse crew till I die. All right, my thought was that Earl Thomas is way too low, obviously.
At number three. I mean, he was injured during the season, although his injury kind of proved that he's like a top 10 player.
Yeah, it did. I mean, look, first off, there's some kind of ridiculous thing here where it's not like it's not quite actual value. It's sort of like value relative to position, because otherwise the top 10 would all be quarterbacks, and yes, Russell Wilson would obviously be in the top 10. Like, in terms of value to the Seahawks, there's no doubt that Russell Wilson is more valuable than Richard Sherman in that debate we discussed a couple weeks ago.
Or any of these players.
Yes. But Earl, I think, is a solid number two. He's clearly more important than Richard Sherman at this point. We have been Team Sherman at times in the past. At this point, you have to concede that Thomas is the more important player. And four spots, like, I love Cam. I love Cam. But four spots better than Cam Chancellor?
Hey.
Like, no, there is more than four spots of separation between Earl and Cam.
I don't know if you remember when Cam Chancellor was holding out two seasons ago.
That wasn't great. I don't know if you remember when Earl Thomas was injured last year. They were one of the worst pass defenses in the NFL.
Okay, so my takeaway was it's very cool that Bobby Wagner made this list, I think for the first time ever, maybe?
It sounds reasonable.
He wasn't on it last year. And at number 39 is a very respectable place. I mean, it's shocking that he wasn't previously on the list, but it's cool that Bobby Wagner was there. And
better late than never.
You mentioned all these players, and really what it's about is all of them together.
It's when all of them on defense.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. It's about Richard Sherman, it's about Earl Thomas, about
starting lineup on defense.
Cam Chancellor, Bobby Wagner, Michael Bennett, Cliff Averill. It's about everything that all of those players do.
Yep.
You know, this is basically the entire core of the defense, and they need all of them at the same time to be the elite defense that they can be.
But at the same time, it's also why you hold the defense to a high standard. Like, when their complaints about the offense wasn't held to the same standards they were, well, that's because they don't have six of the top 100 players in the NFL on their unit. They have two.
Yeah, Doug Baldwin's like a maybe top 150 player at best.
Yeah, pedestrian. Pedestrian.
Look, if DeMarco Murray's number 33, I think Kristen Michael's coming in at 19.
I was wondering, CJ Procise, given, you know, how well he played when he was healthy last year, he could crack the top 20.
Per play basis, if the NFL players are looking at that.
Exactly. I think they spent a lot of time studying DVOA, as they should. All right. Anything else on the Seahawks?
There was discussion about Pete Carroll going out of his way to note that they're looking at extending Cam Chancellor right now.
That is true, yeah. So, I mean, Cam said there had been no talks as yet. It's, you know, that's the kind of thing you want to have done before the start of training camp, presumably. You've still got a couple months before that. I guess a month and a half at this point.
But I do like that they're discussing this now, and that Pete was so public about his praise for Cam Chancellor and the need to extend him.
Yeah. So we'll hope that gets worked out. Is with Russell Wilson's extension, this is not something I will spend a second of my life worrying about.
Wow.
Because it'll get worked out or it won't. And worrying about it
it's
won't change anything.
It's kind of different than Russell Wilson's extension, because there's no "it won't" with Russell Wilson.
Yeah, people definitely thought, like, people were trying to sow that seed. Don't you remember that?
But we knew that that wasn't the case. That's what I'm trying to say to you. There was no logical person out there who thought Russell Wilson wasn't going to sign an extension.
Well, then there are a lot of illogical people out there. I'm just saying, it's not something I'm going to spend any time worrying about. Although I said the same thing about Cam's holdout, and then he did hold out 2 weeks into the season. I should have worried about it.
We kept saying but that again, we shouldn't worry about this, but then we should have really worried about
but
it.
But again, it's not like I lost anything by not spending those 2 weeks worrying.
I mean, I guess so. Like, it's a football game that other people are playing. We shouldn't worry about any of it.
So, on that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.